This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. Today in Episode 8, we're talking to Philadelphia Flyers forward Sean Couturier. Couturier's Flyers are one of the hottest teams in the NHL right now and are right back in the playoff race. We'll also talk to him about being named to the North American Under-23 team for the upcoming World Cup. Later, the Hockey News experts discuss the potential NHL expansion draft and which teams will grab the last available playoff spots. Our guest today is a member of the Philadelphia Flyers, a 2011 first-round draft pick, and a recently named member of the North American Under-23 team for the World Cup, Sean Couturier. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I think by now everyone kind of knows that the Flyers are on a bit of a roll. You've got 8 wins in your last 10 games, right back in the thick of the playoff race. What has changed in the last little while that's gotten you guys back on track and gotten you so hot?
Well, I think since the All-Star break, we're kind of a team like on a mission. We were behind in the standings, but we were close enough to make a push. We're on a mission. We're playing some good hockey, but we're really dialed in as a group and focused and just taking it one game at a time. We know now we're kind of in control of our destiny, but at the same time we gotta work hard every game and be ready to compete and try to get some wins every night.
And what has Dave Hakstol brought to the team? What's he been like as a coach?
He's been great. Obviously, first few months was kind of a little adaptation period, new culture, new system a little bit. And it kind of took us a little while to kind of get together and figure out the way he kind of expected us to play. But I think since December, we've been a pretty good team and tough to play again. I think since then we've just kind of taken off and climbed right back up in the standings.
Now, you're a guy who scored a lot in junior and you flash that ability every now and then, but you're mostly tasked with defensive shutdown duties. Do you ever wish you could be unleashed to show kind of more what you can do offensively?
Well, I think this year I've proven that I can be an offensive guy as well. But at the same time, I think I'm always going to be one of those solid two-way players that you can rely defensively, but you can rely as well offensively when you need a goal. I think that this year I've kind of taken a step forward in my offensive game. Obviously, it's kind of been slowed down a little bit by injuries, but overall, I think statistically speaking, my stats are better and more consistent, and I think getting the opportunity this year to play with some good players and some second power play time definitely helps as well.
Right. Now, moving on to the World Cup, what was your reaction to being named to the North American team, and what do you think of this format with the Under-23 team?
I'm really happy to be part of it. I didn't really know what to expect when they announced the team. I know there's a lot of young talent out there, a lot of guys coming in these past year drafts that are making an impact in the league right away. I honestly didn't really know what to expect. I can expect to be like one of those kind of a little bit of a veteran. I mean, it's already my fifth year. I'm still young, but it's already my fifth year. I've been playing against these guys for 5 years now. I gained quite experience playing all these games and playing against playing in playoffs and gaining experience. I think I can bring that on the team, and I can play maybe different roles too. The type of player I am, I think I can play different roles. So that definitely helped me, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned being the veteran on the team. You're very likely to be the oldest guy on the team. Have you thought about maybe being named captain of that team?
No, I haven't really thought too much about that. I mean, we're so focused right now on our season playoffs that honestly I haven't really thought about the team. So the under 23, too much.
Right. And do you think that team as a whole will have sort of a chip on its shoulder? Do you think you'll have something to prove to the rest of the, you know, the sort of well-known and bigger, more established teams?
Well, I think we kind of got nothing to lose, I think. I think no one really, there's not a whole lot of people that expect a whole lot out of us. Obviously, we're young, but I think there's great talent. I think skill-wise, we're right up there with any team in the tournament. And, I mean, obviously, experience. We're not quite there, but in a short tournament like that, I think what's most important is as a team is whoever kind of gets chemistry going as quick as possible and gets to know each other as soon as possible. And I think in a tournament like that, we can surprise a lot of people.
Right. And finally, Sean, you're a known Red Sox fan. What do you think of their chances this year?
Honestly, I haven't really followed a whole lot of baseball these past few years, so I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm always cheering for them, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see once the season gets going, and hopefully, I can jump on the wagon.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your time, and good luck with the last 10 or 12 games here.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I'd like to kick things off by introducing the most special guest in the history of this podcast, even though it's about, I don't know, 6 episodes old. Our boss is on the show, the managing editor, Edward Fraser. We'd like to welcome him to this podcast. Hey, Ed, how's it going?
Hey, Matt, thanks so much for having me here. And let's not forget, as we're going through here, that, yes, I am your boss.
Mr. Manager.
Exactly.
We just
call him Manager.
That's right. I was going to make fun of him, but maybe I shouldn't.
Wait until I start talking, then you can start poking fun at him.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. Well, I guess first off, the main thing we wanted to discuss that's had us buzzing in the office today and throughout the week really is coming out of the GM meetings, the discussion of the potential expansion draft in the event of a Las Vegas team, maybe a Quebec team as well, but more likely a Las Vegas team, and various parameters were laid out. They're not official yet, but we have a rough idea now based on discussions with Bill Daly when he spoke to the media at the meetings. We have a rough idea of what the expansion draft would look like, and it appears for now that teams will be able to protect an option of 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, 1 goaltender, or 8 skaters and 1 goaltender, and the first and second year players, so players who are in year 1 or 2 of entry level deals, will also be exempt, but everyone else is fair game. And so far we don't even know for sure if players with no movement clauses can be protected. That apparently is the big point of contention. So let's discuss it, guys. What do we think, and what types of players do we think we're going to see teams claiming?
I think, first of all, you have to realize, as an expansion team, how good do you want to be off the top? I mean, a team like Las Vegas is a little bit different because I don't think you're going to have too much trouble drawing fans because you're going to get the spectacle of it in the team. A lot of your fan base is going to be people who are just coming into the town to watch it as though it is any other show. Oh, Blue Man Group sold out? Let's go chalk out the Black Knights.
I saw Blue Man Group, by the way, in Las Vegas at the Luxor. Overrated. They threw toilet paper on the crowd, and that's art.
I saw the exact
dry or wet toilet paper?
Yeah, it's dry.
Oh, okay.
You pull it up over your head. I saw it too. Boy, this is devolving quickly. I saw it too, and not only I saw it on my honeymoon, and not only that, I bought the spit painting. When they spit like marshmallow, and then they put paint in their mouth, and they spin it, and they make an artwork. And I was like, hell, it's the honeymoon keepsake, and that painting is currently hanging in my bathroom.
There you go.
Anyway, so back to hockey. Is this what you guys do during these podcasts?
Yes. Keep paying us, please, sir.
So obviously, goaltending, number one. That's the thing that's going to keep you in games off the top. We've seen that in every expansion draft going back, for those of us who are old enough to remember expansion drafts. That's where you start. So that's what teams are going to be looking for off the hop, is where can you get a goaltender who can keep you in games to keep things exciting. But after that, tradable assets as well. I mean, you know, you want people who you can turn into picks so that you can grow. You're not going to win. This isn't going to be Florida, who's going to be 1 point out of a playoff spot in their first 2 seasons, and then even with the salary cap and the parity that this league's created, they're going to struggle off the hop. So you want assets right away. That's the way I would look at it if I was a GM.
That's very interesting, too. I hadn't thought about the tradable assets. So maybe you look for guys that have 1 year left on their deal that you know can be flippable eventually. To me, what is the interesting wrinkle this time around, at least this is what the NHL is trying to claim, is that they're hoping that this expansion team will be more competitive than any previous expansion team based on the way they manipulate the cap, because the team's going to have to meet that salary floor, and teams are going to have to leave exposed at least 25% of their salary, which means you are going to see some high profile expensive players, maybe not good players, we'll see, but some high profile guys are going to be claimed, so it could mean that your expansion team is better than expected.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean, this is going to be a deep pocketed club, but I think as we've learned time and time again, there's a difference between being moderately successful and being that bubble team and building a winner. So do you want to be that team that's just middling and kind of sitting on the playoff bubble? No, you want to be a team that's, I mean, you don't want to hop on Tank Nation right off the bat. But
no.
You want to have that eye on the future where you're going to be an actual winning club, not just one that's Arizona or Columbus year after year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite interesting because of the way they slot, particularly with the goalies. I think they're really set. Target number one for me would obviously be Frederik Andersen in Anaheim. He's not old enough for a no-trade clause, even when he signs his next deal. Misses it by a year. Sorry, Freddie. But, you know, if you're the Ducks, you're obviously going to protect John Gibson. And unfortunately for Andersen, that leaves him exposed. And he's a pretty good goaltender in his own right. I'm even wondering if, you know, St. Louis, it kind of depends because Brian Elliott will be a free agent by then. But if you're St. Louis and you're smart, you're like, sure, we'll sign you to a one-year deal, Brian. Can't have a no-trade clause. Sorry mm-hmm. about that. But then a tandem of Frederik Andersen and Brian Elliott, that's pretty hot stuff. The salary cap floor, I think, is going to be pretty interesting. And the whole idea of exposing 25% of the previous year's salary cap, I think that's going to play a big factor with a lot of teams. Here's a name that I'm going to throw out there. Jason Spezza in Dallas. Let's look a year and a bit down the line when this potential draft would happen. He's playing excellent hockey now. Might still be playing excellent hockey next year, but doesn't have a no-move clause, so no matter what happens there, you're cool. Making $7 million for a couple more seasons after that. And if you're Dallas, you know, you got to be thinking about John Klingberg, who also does not have a no-trade clause and is obviously going to be both the future and the present of your blue line. If you need to expose salary, Jason Spezza is a pretty good way to get there. Cody Eakin would be another one, but I think at that point, based on age, you know, Spets is probably the one that makes more sense for your club. And if you're Las Vegas, that's a number one center right there. You know?
And he's got some razzle-dazzle, which I think the people in Vegas would enjoy
totally.
That.
Totally.
But if you're Dallas and you're still in your winning window,
uh-huh.
like, is there who's coming up? Who amongst their centers? Who can kind of fill that role? Like, you know, are you willing to give away a guy like Spezza, who's, you know, like you said, a number one center on most teams. But you're looking to win a Stanley Cup.
Sure.
So that's the other factor there. Is like that, and that's, I mean, the good teams are the ones who are going to get really punished here. That's
yeah.
the problem, because a lot of teams like Chicago, Dallas.
The deep teams,
yeah.
they're going to lose assets and, you know, maybe keep components on their clubs that are looking towards a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah. And here's the thing, and the no movement clause thing is so huge here, because if teams did have the option of exposing said players, then Los Angeles, I think it's pretty obvious Dustin Brown
yeah.
would be a huge candidate to be exposed. Not only is he signed long term for a deal that's looking pretty shady right now in terms of, not shady in a illegal sense, but just not good if you're a Kings fan.
Ill-advised.
Yeah. And again, there's a guy who could be a fantastic leader on a team, could certainly be the captain, would give you, you know, that rough element, you know, he'll stick up for teammates and whatnot. But he does have a no-move clause, so if he's off the list, then the Kings have to start looking down their lineup and say, well, who do we expose to get into that 25% cap rule that's not a first or second year pro that doesn't have a no-move clause? Like, I mean, you have to protect Jeff Carter, right? But there's a guy with a lot of salary that doesn't have a no-move clause, whereas a lot of other guys do. LeCavalier is going to be gone by that point. You start thinking to yourself, like, who are going to be the obvious suspects? And for some, like you said, some of those big teams, it's going to be a bit of a chess match there.
It's interesting, too, because the no-movement is so huge, because if it turns out that players are exempt if they have no-movement clauses, you're going to see teams trying to circumvent the situation. An example that comes to my mind is Tampa Bay with Ben Bishop and Andre Vasilevsky. Based on Bishop's age, I believe his contract's up next year, they should re-sign him and give him a no-movement clause whether they want to or not, because that automatically makes Vasilevsky exempt as well, because Vasilevsky will have enough years of service. This is his second year of NHL service, so by next year he would not be exempt unless Ben Bishop is re-signed with a no-movement clause.
Yeah. We're speculating here, and we don't know what it's going to be, but it wouldn't surprise me if the league steps in and says, no, only players with existing no-movement clauses. You can't sign a guy and get him on a no-movement clause, because teams would be going all over the place.
That's right. Exactly like you that. Get a no-trade clause.
You get a no-trade clause. What about Phil Kessel?
Ooh. Sorry, I thought I was on Saved by the Bell. Somebody just got sent to Mr.
Time
Mullen's
out.
Yeah.
What about Phil Kessel?
He's got a lot of years left.
Not looking like a good deal, and he's not really fitting in there. Well, I mean, Pittsburgh.
And Vegas would be... I want people to read between the lines here. Vegas would be a good fit. There's lots to do there.
Not a lot, not a big...
Lots to eat.
Local media scene.
There. I think he'd be comfortable. There'd be a lot of obscurity for him there. That's what I'm trying to say. That's the most important point. He could toil in
relative
obscurity, I think. And he's got that razzle-dazzle game that would thrill the fans. And I think if you're a Vegas team, I think all you want some players who have good hands who can score. Maybe, and I think, you know, for the uninitiated hockey fans, maybe some physical players.
You need a fighter, stuff like that.
You have that grace period of a few years where there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm no matter how the team does. So you can target a type of player like Phil Kessel without thinking about a Stanley Cup. You're saying, hey, he can score. He'll get the fans on their feet. And he'll help us get to the salary floor.
Jesus, Jason Spezza, Phil Kessel, Frederik Andersen. I'm starting to think this team might compete.
Yeah, like, and you know what?
I'm not thinking about a rebuild. I'm thinking about forget it. Trade your first round draft pick, try to pick somebody up.
And again, look at some of the other teams. You know, you look at Boston. Would they have to expose Adam McQuaid?
You get rid of Char at this point.
No trade clause.
You trade? Oh, I guess. Does Char not move? Does Char not want to go to a contender? And then...
He's got a cup. Well, and Boston's still... You know, they're in the mix. I'm sure that if you look at a team that has Rask, Bergeron, Marchand...
Yeah, fair, okay,
in
fair
a pretty
enough.
Wide
yeah.
open... East. Now, granted, yeah, okay. we need to add another year onto this because we're talking about the eve of the 2017-8 season. Does Chicago have to expose Andrew Shaw? You just start running into these numbers games where you have... The guys with no move, clauses. You have guys that are still pretty young, expose some salary. It gets really sort of interesting in there. Edmonton, like they have so many good young players now. McDavid and Darnell Nurse will be exempt because they will be considered second year pros. But you know you're protecting Klefbom. I'm just going to assume Hall, the Nuge, Eberle are still there. So does Benoit Pouliot get exposed? Another player who can play a top six role and make your team pretty decent on the ice.
I think you're going to see a lot of guys like Joffrey Lupul exposed. Sort of a we'll scratch your back, you scratch ours. So, hey, you need that salary floor. You can take Joffrey Lupul off our hands because that's a contract we regret. But he can sort of play a top six role and he's used to playing a non-playoff team. I think... Most commonly, you're going to see those types of players. Maybe even a Scott Hartnell kind of player. Guys who have chunky contracts with several years left, who are good enough players that they can sort of make up a competitive roster core on the new team.
I wonder if there's going to be any kind of them putting any stipulation where you can't reacquire a player who's been plucked off your roster. Because that was some of the stuff that was going on. Where, you know, you take the guy and then, okay, we'll give you a second round draft pick because we didn't actually want to lose that guy. And that was the way some of these teams were accumulating, you know, mid picks in order to kind of beef up their team for the future. But, you know, that's what makes this whole thing fascinating because there's so many machinations. And we don't know what the specifics are at this point. But it's certainly, if it happens, and kind of as a fan, I hope it does. Because trade deadline, free agency, duds for the past few years. This is fun. Yeah, right. this is fantasy draft stuff right here.
That's
this
right.
Makes it verb.
And if there's one thing we've learned, that every time there's a new set of parameters in the NHL, the GMs will find a way to circumvent. I do it in my fantasy leagues, right? You find a way to legally beat the system until you find out that it's illegal.
Yeah.
Right. And same thing happened with the Kovalchuk contract with Lamoriello in New Jersey.
And the first part of the whole fantasy thing will be who becomes a new management team. In Las Vegas.
Very good question.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, George McPhee is out there.
Yeah.
There's a guy who has been a GM for a very long time. He's just named co-GM of Canada's team for the World Championship,
so
not to be confused with World Cup.
Yeah.
So he's in the game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're going to have some pretty good young execs sort of knocking at the door, too. I think it kind of depends on how, you know, what do they want? Do they want to put their stamp on their own team? Or do they want to grow within their own organization?
I think you look at Toronto as the model, a team that's essentially an expansion team at this point, worse than, but a team that blew up their entire front office and started very smartly with an experienced guy at the top, kind of
mm-hmm.
face of your franchise, Lamoriello, but surrounded him with guys who are very experienced at different levels. You got a Hunter scouting.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your analytics. What do they got? About 48 people in their analytics department.
But Kyle Dubas is kind of the head
of
that.
He's the face
of
it, yeah.
He's the face of that.
Yeah, and I think that's the new way of doing things in the NHL, is there's no singular voice in the room making the decisions.
Right.
It's their kind of staff. So, you know, I think Vegas is smart. They're going to do that. And I think George McPhee is perfect for that. A guy who's respected around the league and with good reason.
The name that I'm thinking about is Mike Fuda in L.A. He's been a popular candidate, very close to a couple of jobs. Maybe, we don't know. It's never officially confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already out in L.A. He's not, in terms of just uprooting his life. It wouldn't be too long of a trip to get to Vegas, I think.
And he knows the teams in that area.
Yeah.
Like
that's
mean,
right.
Vegas is going to get dropped
intimate.
In the West. Yeah, so you're going to already have that. So that's a great idea. I mean, Big Fee's going to be a guy.
Paul Fenton.
Yeah,
Paul
Fenn's
another
always,
name.
Yeah,
think about.
In the West. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's fun. I mean,
it's
you know, I haven't really been a supporter of expansion into Las Vegas, but I might change my mind just because simply this is going to be a blast.
Just for the discussions alone.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't know if the team's going to work, but talking about the team, fantastic.
All right, moving on. Each team has about 10 to 12 games left in the regular season, so we're starting to look ahead to the playoffs. A lot of it has already seemingly been decided, but a couple of good playoff races going on in each division. Out west, you've got the Colorado Avalanche and Minnesota Wild kind of neck and neck for the last playoff spot. And in the east, the wild card race is between three teams, the Flyers, Penguins, and Red Wings. The Red Wings, of course, trying to extend that 24-year playoff streak. Guys, how do you see those playoff races shaking out?
For me, the Flyers are the most intriguing team right now because they're so hot. And as a lot of folks have pointed out on Twitter, this is like Dave Haxtell's MO. When he was the head coach of North Dakota, his teams would always make a big surge in the second half. So he's done this before. He's really, you know, he's really gotten the attention of the young players. He was known as a guy that develops well. And what we're seeing is those young guys, headlined by Braden Schenn and obviously Shane Gostisbehere as well, they are thriving under him. And I think they've got those young legs, and of course they've already got Claude Giroux up top. They're getting good goaltending as well. They have that momentum that right now it looks so promising. And I was actually looking at Pittsburgh's schedule the other day, and they had three more dates with the Flyers. Two more against Washington. They were playing a lot of teams that just kind of naturally hate them. You know, the Rangers are in there, the Islanders in there. And I worry about Pittsburgh. I think Detroit's really kind of flatlining as well. So it's kind of funny because I kind of only believe in the Flyers right now. So I guess I'll throw it to you guys.
Well, Pittsburgh, I mean, the Malkin factor is the big one. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But
and Cronwall for Detroit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I reading Matt Larkin's column from a couple days back, it seems like Detroit's ready for a little bit of luck. You know, they've been an unlucky team this year. So, and Detroit, I mean, just kind of history on its side. I mean, really, last year we thought they were going to miss, too. And all
mm-hmm.
of a sudden they turn it on. They have that ability. Pittsburgh, that's the one you don't know because you don't know exactly how. I mean, Crosby seems to bring his game up a level when Malkin's out. Maybe even play better because there isn't, he's so much more relied upon. But Pittsburgh's just been that team with so many weak links. How can you trust them? And especially when the pressure gets on and with those head-to-head games against Philadelphia. Because Pittsburgh is a team that wasn't expected to be scratching and calling to make a playoff spot. This is a team that was expected to win the East and contend for the Stanley Cup. And now all of a sudden they're finding themselves in a position, and you've already done in your coach. What else can you do at this point, really? So it's kind of a win-now situation for Pittsburgh, and the pressure is on them a hell of a lot more than it is with Philadelphia.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about Pittsburgh, and this sound... That's me patting myself on the back because I was saying from the start of the summer.
It kind of sounds a little like something
else. It sounds like something else. But either way, I never liked Pittsburgh's chances even in the summer because they didn't do enough to address their defense. And they still haven't. I still don't think they're a sound defensive team. They let Paul Martin walk. They let Christian Ehrhoff walk. And I don't think they did enough. They've, you know, sorry, Justin Schultz, but acquiring Justin Schultz is not the way to improve your defense. It keeps you mobile, sure, and you're moving the puck better, but in terms of lockdown, shutdown defense, I don't think they've been the same since they lost Martin and also Simon Dupre last year. So I do worry about the Penguins a lot, and people are saying, yes, they've won the first few games without Evgeny Malkin, but okay, do that for another 10. Do that three times against Philadelphia. Do that against Detroit. And Ed, like you said about Detroit, I'm someone who, I'm not giving up on them yet. They had a couple horrible games recently. They looked really flat against Toronto. They looked flat against Philadelphia. But the puck luck, throughout this mini slump they've had, they've actually been outshooting their opponents most of the time. Their shooting percentage has been uncharacteristically low, almost freakishly low. So the odds are strong that the luck will even out, they'll regress to the mean, the pucks will start going in. Even Peter Mrazek has been slumping in net. He started to correct that trend recently as well. So I'm not betting against them. And people at the beginning of the year said, oh, look, Mike Babcock's gone. Suddenly Detroit has bad possession. Oh, no. That was true for 1 month. But since then, Detroit's been, I think, number seven, something like that. They've been very good under Jeff Blashill. So I don't think people should be pointing a finger at coaching right away.
If I was picking any of those three teams as my sure bet, I'm taking Detroit to make it in. You know, I understand Philly's hot. Pittsburgh, they've got the high-end star power. But Detroit... they just get it done. They just find a way to get it done. And, you know, to me, it's looking on the paper, they're the best of those three teams on paper. And I would definitely take Detroit of those three to get in.
The big question, obviously, is did they get it done because of Babcock or did they get it done as a team?
I think there's continuity there, though. And, I mean, you've got the stars at that lineup. And, yeah, they're aging. And, yeah, okay, you're missing Cromwell. But, like, you know, Zetterberg, Datsyuk, Dylan Larkin coming up, despite the struggles, Nyquist, Tatar, like you've got firepower there, and I tend to lean more towards Matt here, and thinking, you know, this is a team that is primed to get things right going down the stretch, and I just don't see them missing, especially in, I think, you know, the worst of the two divisions in the conference.
Regardless of who the coach is, I believe it was last season Henrik Zetterberg said, this streak isn't ending on my watch.
Yeah.
And So, you know, there's a guy who can rally the team. He's a leader. He can single-handedly get those guys going and keep that streak going.
I think they've got an underrated defense as well. I don't want to belabor the point. You know, okay, yeah, I'm picking Detroit, but I think they're underrated. And I think Mrazek is, like you said, he's getting his game back, and he's been good for much of the year. So.
And Cromwell, for as much as, you know, he is an important player, of course, but he's in his mid-30s now, and he's having one of the worst seasons of his career.
Yeah.
It's not like he's been the absolute world beater, so losing him I don't think is as catastrophic as it would have been maybe 5 years ago. And to me, Detroit is sort of the anti-St. Louis. I'm done doubting Detroit. Every time I doubt them, they still make the playoffs, and every time I back St. Louis, they get bombed out in the first round. So I've learned my lesson. I'm never supporting St. Louis again, and I'm never doubting Detroit again.
Yeah. And how do we feel about Colorado?
I just want to congratulate us on not mentioning Nicholas Lidstrom.
Oh,
throughout, I mean, imagine talk about Detroit defense and not relying on
how do you replace?
Yeah, how do you? I mean, how do you? Once you, I mean, on a team that you rely on
5 years,
exactly.
Have they
let
recovered?
Got
Lidstrom. How do you replace Terry Sawchuk in there?
Yeah.
The West is even more fascinating, though, to me.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like Colorado's going to do it, but I don't necessarily...
How? How
do they? I don't know how they're doing
it. Of life.
I don't know how they're doing it now, but they're playing... I mean, speaking of Vegas, they're playing with house money.
Yeah.
And I don't have much faith in them going anywhere in the playoffs, but I kind of feel like Minnesota, just like they've been in this rut all year, and
yeah,
I don't really know what this team is, and It kind of feels like when Colorado, they got a lot of great young players. Most of Minnesota's players are on the older side. They're on the wrong side of 30. It just feels like in this crunch time, Colorado's got the horses right now.
They're the house money team of the West, whereas all the pressure's on Minnesota. This is a team that was expected, again, just like Pittsburgh, not to be clawing for a playoff spot, but to be contending, and they're not. Now, I mean, who really cares in the end? Because neither of these teams get through the first round.
They're the Republican nominations. Lesser of two evils, and just who's gonna squeak in just to get steamrolled
absolutely
in the next round?
Yeah.
Right?
So which team in the West is Trump?
Oh, jeez.
Careful.
Yeah. I had to think about it.
Matt Largent. Anaheim is Donald Trump.
Yeah. I'm afraid to answer that one, so I'm going to leave it. I'll say Anaheim's Donald Trump because they're orange. I don't know.
Oh,
safe answer. Safe
well
answer.
Played, sir. Well played. But Matt, speak to the numbers for Colorado. I mean, possession.
I mean, Minnesota's possession numbers are not good, and they've actually stayed just as bad under John Torchetti. Colorado's are historically bad. And I know Colorado fans get upset with us because we just keep hammering on this year after year, but it keeps coming back to bite them year after year, so why not? Why can't we keep showing the correlation between good possession and success? And Colorado has been so bad. They're worse than Buffalo. They're worse than Edmonton. Worse than Toronto. They're at the bottom of the league. They allow so many more shots than they generate, and that just you can get by on a statistical anomaly, just like they did 2 years ago when they had that great record. But it always comes back to earth. So yes, they might make the playoffs, but if they don't buck this trend, they're going to be bad again next year. They don't seem to learn. Whatever their system is under Patrick Waugh, it doesn't seem to be working.
Which is funny because I'm still picking Colorado to make the playoffs. Just not do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Your luck can go to game 82.
Yeah, sure.
It just tends not to go past this.
Well,
you can ride the crest.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one that you come back to is in the Cup Finals. What is it? Past seven champions, top three in
yes, top three or top four. We were looking at it the other day, and the correlation and you know, the people who are the anti-stat people out there, I know there are some of them, and I always want to show that stat to them and say, hey, how can you argue this correlation right now? It's 7 years in a row. And many of those years it was the number one team, not just top two or three, but overall, seven straight years of top three or top four in Corsi won the Stanley Cup. Not just did well, won the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So until we see that trend change, it's hard to support a team that has weak possession
numbers.
It's
impossible to.
All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Quick update on something we talked about last week. We were talking about the San Jose Sharks goal song vote. Our favorite pick, the LMFAO remix, did not make it out of the first round. It lost to boring stuff like Shout and a Van Halen song. I think a Sammy Hagar Van Halen song.
Oh, well, that's not even real Van Halen.
Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah.
So
Diamond Dave or nothing.
Poorly done by the Sharks fans.
I'm crushed.
I understand, though. They're the ones that actually have to listen to it.
I just threw my pen. I just Dave Hodged.
Yeah.
And on that note, see you next week.